I feel like of all the shows that I've ever, well, actually, of all the games that I think that could have made a good movie on or a TV show,
yeah,
Fallout seems like it's pretty much legit. Like, I mean, from the previews and our, you know, Trisha went there as well, which actually was really nice.
Yeah, our friend Trisha, she was on the red carpet.
She was on the red carpet. Like, no, seriously. And I just realized from seeing a picture on her post, I realized that Maude is actually a lot taller than I thought she was. So it's one of her friends that I've seen on her show before, and it was like, you know, obviously on camera we all look about the same height, but you know, real life IRL, like, dude, yes. So yeah.
Oh, no, Amazon. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
It's on Amazon. Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, and of course, already Josh went and saw Monkey. I think the movie is called Monkey, right? That's the one that just got released. It was originally like.
Yeah.
It was the original Netflix movie that was made but shelved and then bought. Because Jordan Peele kind of found it and basically just brought it out. So I'm glad it's a thing. But yeah, I will say happy Thursday.
So, happy Thursday. Have you jumped into? Because we just finished Three Bodies.
Yeah. Marie, so I haven't started Three Body yet. Yeah.
I wrote up the review on that.
Okay.
Giving like serious or episodic anthology sci-fi a little bit of a break.
Okay.
Three Body is a lot to chew through. It's really dense.
I'm trying to get my like a mental effect. This week's been I've had a lot of work and nothing to publish because I'm waiting on reviews previews.
Well, I've got a bunch of stuff on embargo too, and man, it's just taken a while. But I'm curious to see how Marie does with Fallout. She really liked the Twisted Metal TV show. Did you see that one?
I did. Yes. I did. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Because it's just ridiculous camp. There's nothing serious about it. So I'm curious, like, Fallout has a bit more of a bite to it, but it's not nearly as dire as The Last of Us.
Also, it's only eight episodes. Well, The Last of Us, so let's say this.
Good show.
It was very good. Like, even if you didn't play the game, even if you didn't read the book, like, you'd know when you watched it.
And the game has such a narrative style to it that you could just watch it as a movie.
No, absolutely. But I'm saying is, like, people fell in love with The Last of Us without even playing the game. Because of the acting, because of the characters, the development, the storyline, the scenery that they were doing, it was beautiful. Fallout is, you know, that whole post-apocalyptic kind of shelter kind of situation and trying to discover the outside world and so on. There's a lot of things going on, especially if you played the game. So I'll say this. I didn't realize it was out till I saw Trisha's post and going on the red carpet for that. And that's when I started to check in on Amazon. And I'm like, sure enough, they're all in there, all eight. It's not going to be staged. Mm-hmm. So that's actually pretty nice. So we're queuing that up. Omar and I are going to watch it this weekend. Then I'm going to be ready for Three Body because that one I have to do. I feel like I'm going to have to do that one by myself. I don't feel like Vanya may not. My wife, I just don't think she'll basically.
I'm not saying like she won't like it, but just from conversations we've had.
Yeah.
And without you being able to kind of spoon feed her, like I was sort of insufferably talking through the first two episodes of Three Body saying, oh, well, this is important. This means that this character's going to know them. And this is like setting up for book two. And this is a setup for book three. I don't think Marie would have stuck with it.
Okay.
And it's only because I'd read the whole trilogy and had very,
but by the end of it though, did she feel like it was a good story that was
so? I think she got to the end of the first season. It's eight episodes. She got to the end of Three Body Problem and liked it for what it was. Mm-hmm. But both her and I are very hypercritical of, does this show feel like it has a plan? Not just season to season, but if I'm going to invest all this time and follow this show, I kind of want to know. They have an ending in mind.
I'm just hoping they continue with it. This is a
and Netflix remember, is no is, guarantee. Yeah,
they're notorious. That's not going to get. They are notorious for killing things within.
So Marie says, like, hey, if they can finish the story, because I've now sort of told her some of the framework of what goes on into book two and into book three. She's like, okay, this actually makes a lot of sense. Why they've condensed some of the things that you said, and if they can find an ending out of the books, that would be great. If Netflix cancels it, I'm going to be so pissed off, and we'll probably never invest in another Netflix show unless we know
it has an ending. I've said that many times with previous shows that they've canceled. It just bothers me that the ones they continue are, I'm not going to say they're not good, but I'm just saying, like, it baffles me just like the decision making.
Do you remember Arrested Development where he's like talking to George Michael about Anne? Really? Her? I feel like that's how Netflix's decision making on shows is, like, a fourth season of Is It Cake?
Arrested Development. I'll say that Arrested Development, Schitt's Creek. What's it called?
Some classics.
There's a lot of good shows, but those are I think TV shows that came over to Netflix. They were not really Netflix series. And like from Netflix original series, there are very few that have continued that have actually gone well. And I've had quite a few series where I'll you know, we'll tell Vanya, like, hey, I'm starting to watch the show, and her running joke is, watch it end after the first season, like watch it not complete, and then you're just basically sitting there with questions.
And I'm like, you know, it's not funny anymore.
It isn't funny because she's right.
She's so right, exactly.
Like, I'll say this: Three Bodies done, and they need to. They should have already announced that they're working on season two. Like, that should have been, at least for me, that save. Like, okay, at least we know it's coming. Like, when we talk about Stranger Things, we know they're working.
For all of my concerns on Netflix's adaptation, if they cancel Three Body Problem season two and season three, then I am not watching anything until I hear the story will run to its completion.
Or just wait till the story completes. Like, I'll watch everything.
But that's just it. Is like, like, Netflix doesn't greenlight seasons two and three if season one doesn't do well, and they play this really obnoxious social media game, get the creators to try and bump up the numbers and bump up the views. And I'm not doing this anymore. I want to see that you are committing to finishing the show. And if I were any type of creator with any type of clout, a director or writer, one of these, you know, massive stars that they'll get for one of their properties, I can't believe they're not going in saying, if you want me to sign on, because this is an incredible amount of, like, Three Body Problems production is so over the top, beautiful feature film. It's incredible that they didn't go in and say, I'm not doing this with you unless there's a guarantee that you will give us the funding to complete the series.
Complete the story. Yeah. Tell it.
And I want to hear a creator come out and say, hey, this is the relationship we have with Netflix. We're going to get to the end. Apple heard that Ted Lasso was going to be a three-season arc. There was no question that we were going to get all three seasons of Ted Lasso.
Yeah. No,
I want to hear someone say, we have a plan for this.
I appreciate them continuing this the story. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. Watching seasons end or watching stories complete and finish is bittersweet. Because you're kind of like, oh, it was kind of nice. But at least you have closure at that point. You have closure. You have completion of the story. And it kills the fandom. It kills any kind of trust in the actual outlet that they're doing it for the fans. They're actually building the arcs. They're trying to give you value for it.
Yeah.
As opposed to all of these one-offs, like, we'll test everything and we'll just build up a library of one-offs. It just kills me. But either way, I'm looking forward to it. Fallout for sure this weekend.
And Fallout, I'm going to jump into. Here is the fun Easter egg. Hey, everybody. This is a tech podcast, by the way, where we talk about
not a movie review show. Yeah, sorry.
Here is the fun find that I just discovered. Mm-hmm. There's an old movie from 1985 called Radioactive Dreams. I saw this years ago on this busted copy of a VHS.
Okay.
I want to say, because I remember it's Dino De Laurentiis, but I want to say it's like a Ukrainian film or something like that. But it is in English, but it was shot like in some place very cheap to shoot movies. I just like to read. This is from the Wikipedia, just to kind of help condense the plot. Radioactive Dreams is a 1985 post-apocalyptic sci-fi comedy. The names of the two main characters are homages to noir detective icons. The film has achieved cult status. The film begins with two boys who have grown up in a fallout shelter in an attempt to escape a nuclear war, and then they later sort of their kids in what 1985 sort of modern day. They rejoin the world in 2001 and soon acquire the activation keys of the world's last nuclear missile. They get involved in gang warfare in their new environment. So I don't know if that plot sounds somewhat similar to anything. Maybe a game that you
maybe a new TV series at this point.
There is a copy of Radioactive Dreams on YouTube that is actually, I mean, it was a low budget film shot. I think it was digital, if not terrible film stock. And it's just been like a copy of a copy of a copy for so long. There's a copy on YouTube that doesn't look terrible. This film is ridiculous. It's not a good movie, but you can kind of see where a part of this sort of was an inspiration for the Fallout video game. So if you're not game for, you know, like really jumping into 8 hours of Fallout media, the TV show, whatever the series is going to mean to you, if you'd like to see sort of the proto version of that with almost no budget.
It's like the Blair Witch Project when it comes to scary movie. It's basically very, very low budget, but, you know, became its own cult classic, and now nobody... I tried showing Omar the Blair Witch Project, and he's like, why is the camera shaking? I'm like, it's supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be, like, real life, handy cam kind of, like, experience. He's like, And then there was another Blair Witch Project, which he didn't find any real scary, so yeah.
Oh, no, and none of the
follow-ups. It does not hold up well.
It really doesn't. So I think I've told this story, maybe even on this podcast, because I was doing just a little sort of writing for the college website, and I was doing a lot of their news reading. Like, I was kind of an anchor for this early streaming real player media news for the Daily Lobo. A buddy of mine who was doing movie reviews had a screener copy of The Blair Witch. So I could not watch Blair Witch in theaters. It made me violently, nauseously motion sick.
Oh, absolutely.
It messed me up.
Yeah.
But I get this preview copy on VHS, so it's warped and distorted.
Serial numbers and all. Got it.
Serial numbers, and so it's got serial numbers across the top and a time code across the bottom.
Yeah, no,
and old school VHS screeners. And so watching it on a little 20-inch TV, that's not giving me motion sickness. It was so much scarier watching it at night in my crappy little Warzone apartment on this tiny CRT TV on a VHS. That movie chilled me. So then I'm like, oh, guys, I'm so excited about this movie. We need to go watch Blair Witch. And then I can't finish it in the theater. And people started making fun of me, like, oh, it's so scary. Juan had to leave. I was like, no, I was going to throw up into my popcorn bucket. But it was not scary at all on a giant movie screen to me. I still feel like there is something about Blair Witch that if you watch it on a TV with this idea that you're sort of scanning through this footage, that that's somehow scarier than the movie theater experience would have been.
There's also a time effect of it too. When the movie came out, how it came out and all of that, that kind of made it more what it was than it is. And the fact of how it was shot. But again, now kids nowadays have so much more bad horror movies, I'll say. Yeah. But like, even just like, because there's a lot, jump scares are not as effective as they used to be on us. Like when we were kids, I'll say jump scares were a lot more, they had a lot more oomph into them, more impact. And Blair Witch was a lot of like confusing you, creating that whole distortion. Where are you? What are you looking at? Images are not clear. There's a lot of that. But again, kids these days don't know what, you know, handy cams are and what they used to be. Everything is clear.
Right.
Like they only know 4K. Like, what?
Well, I mean, like someone can have sort of handheld or shakier footage, but like, your iPhone smooths it out way better than those cameras did.
Exactly.
Blair Witch.
Exactly. So and the low light capabilities were not there. But yeah.
And I feel like because I'm trying to think, there's an Alien. What is the name of that movie? There are only really like two proto found footage films that reached any kind of like consumer awareness or financial success. One of them was literally shot just like on home DV, and it's adorable because at the end, this family is like trying to stave off an alien abduction. Mm-hmm. And like at the end, you can see these aliens sort of like float and walk into their home, but it just looks like kids in giant alien head costumes. Like it's so, so cheap, but the concept was so good. It did get this weird kind of made for TV remake on the Sci-Fi Channel. So the original isn't an effective movie, but it did kind of spur on this idea of what if we just collected all of this footage? And then there was another sort of, I think like a zombie style or cannibal kind of movie that also was sort of an early proto version of found footage. But now found footage is a genre cliche unto itself, and kids coming up now have dozens and dozens of versions of this that have all been higher production value, more effective. Mm-hmm. Even that really weird movie Unfriended, mm-hmm. when it came out, was an awful film. And then it hit this crazy peak in the middle of the pandemic. Do you remember this one? It was the one where the entire movie takes place in like a multi-window Skype call.
No. Okay, no, I didn't see
that. The entire movie, I think it's called Unfriended. The okay. entire movie is just the video streaming. So when it first came out, everyone was like, oh, this movie's BS. Like anyone's going to sit there and just look at their webcam and then, you know, kids aren't just going to go hang out. And then in the middle of the pandemic, it was like, oh, this movie's actually kind of creepy because I'm only talking to my friends on Zoom calls. What if there was a ghost in our Zoom call?
Well, so the premise of the – so I can definitely see that the premise of Unfriended is based on probably on Five Nights at Freddy with the whole scanning on cameras and changing different views. But having the entire movie run – well, I'll say that because
– well, because there's no differing perspective. It really is just webcam video call, not – because like Five Nights at Freddy's is so effective because of what am I missing – mm-hmm. But that's more like Night Trap. Do you remember the old Sega CD game?
Yep.
From back in the day? Mm-hmm. So Night Trap was, I can look at this other place, but when I'm looking at this other place, I'm missing something else.
Yeah,
so
this is
the
Unfriended review. Oh, dang it.
From 10 years ago. It was 10 years ago.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
We all
so yeah, 10 years ago, this movie was stupid. In 2020... this movie was surprisingly effective.
Oh, it used to be actually called Cybernatural at the 2014
Fantasia Film. That's so dumb.
And it changed to Unfriended. Oh my god.
That's hilarious.
It is crazy, but no, I mean the concept of basically saying, look, you know, we spend so much time on Zoom calls and meetings right. and Google Meet and all of that. To have something actually catastrophic go on and the only thing you could do is keep looking at a webcam and on a screen, like, yeah,
it worked a lot better when we were all on Zoom calls.
Yeah, it, so, it definitely well
I mean, it's one of those like though. If you go in for cheese corny like horror fluff,
yeah,
it is a really good cheesy horror cotton candy film. Like there's no substance, there's no grand message, there's no metaphor for anything. It's just a bunch of kids, they're, you know, attractive young teenager people, and they just get killed by the end of the film. So that's
no spoilers. No spoilers.
I don't think that's a spoiler if we're talking about low budget schlock horror.
I'm with you. And but yeah, so we'll say there's a lot. Budgets are one thing for movies, but horror movies, it really depends on when they come out, how they're made,
yeah.
and how well we're able to relate to them. And you're right. Like a movie like Unfriended had to be during a pandemic for it to be appreciated, because that's what we were doing. And that's what, you know, would be, we were all scared to a certain point. There's some uncertainty, mm-hmm. a lot of tension, and that just fed off of that, even though it came out 6 years before the pandemic.
6 years before.
It's like they knew it was coming. But no, like, and you start watching some of these other movies like Contagion and stuff like that. Like the concept of the pandemic was covered multiple times.
Yeah. How freaky is it? Is it Contagion? Is or That's the one that it's almost spot on what actually happened like to us, right?
The way it transmitted, the way
everything shut down.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's freaky because that's like, oh. Totally predicted it. It wasn't like, oh, it was sort of like that. No, it's like it was exactly that.
Yeah, no, I know. It's one of those. But with that being said, I will say welcome to everybody. It is a beautiful Thursday. It is the second dose of Mr. Juan Carlos Bagnell, as well as myself this week, this time on the best of our week. We're going to be talking about a lot of cool things, hopefully. We're going to be ushering in and trying to cover some of the things since Android 15 is officially in beta, which means
that's right.
It's a little bit more functional. It's a little bit better. And hopefully some of the things we see in it will continue to be part of the actual final version as we lead up to, the launch of the Pixels, as well as also Google I.O. Are you downloading it already?
I'm checking right now because I have my Pixel 8 Pro on developer preview too. So now I need to see if I can get it updated to the beta. So
I want to say it should. As long as you were able to get developer preview 1 as an OTA and you didn't sideload it, it should download.
Yay!
Hey. I'll say this. I updated
it's like
mine.
I need to just stay on betas because like the actual public OTAs were like the last two guys in Techland to ever get OTAs on our Pixels.
Something about the configuration of where we are and what we use, I think maybe like even the carrier that we use, that dictates certain level of where and when we get it. I don't know if it still works at all, but like, I mean, I remember at one point, when the Pixel 6 Pro or was the 7 Pro, there was a whole bunch of debacle going on with the December update. Remember that where Google had to pull that back? And when it was pushed for December, it was pushed only for AT&T customers or people that had AT&T SIM cards. So I switched my phone into it prior to hearing the whole debacle because I was just never getting it. Like it was already like 10 days into December and there was still the whole, are they going to pull it? Not going to pull it. And I got the update and I got it to install when I put in an AT&T SIM. Something about Google and their rollout of updates that still caters to to carriers without it being a locked device bugs me. Like it's supposed to be an unlocked phone. So in reality, you're supposed to be getting the unlocked experience from Google. But there is still something in the background where Google has to play nice with, you know, certain carriers and they can justify delaying the rollout of the update because of that. It's just,
for whatever reason, that's us.
So you're on Mint, I'm on T-Mobile, which for all intents and purposes,
we're both on T-Mobile. Yeah. Right.
We're both chilling on T-Mobile at this point, you know, no Ryle Reynolds in here. But I am probably, because I was debating if I should do this on the 7 Pro or should I go on with the 8 Pro. I probably will pull the trigger on that, even if I have to just stay on betas and go, stay on the beta channel after the full release is done. That's just the only way to be able to play with some of the new early features. And again, I hope desktop mode stays. It's just one of my hopes.
I'll be really curious to see if desktop mode stays. And this will install a beta version of Android 15.
Yeah.
If you were currently running a beta version, that's for Android 14 QPR. So the going from Android 15 developer preview 2 to Android 15 beta is only 600 meg.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes kind of sense.
So, I mean, I'm hoping that what I was experiencing on DP2, really this is just kind of a refining and that they're not going to start gutting like... Because
they're notorious.
Our buddy Michal,
Michal
went through and ADB commanded and flashed a whole bunch of stuff to get the more robust version of what this Google flavor of the desktop mode is looking like. And it does improve things like window management, split screening. Like you can kind of drag to a side and it'll snap to
a snapping
side. It's really good. If you don't jump through all of those hoops like I did not, I purposely just wanted to see if I turn on desktop mode, will it at least just be functional again? So the basics are back to where we were, I want to say circa Android 10. We have a functional app drawer again. We have functional window movement again. You can resize windows. You can minimize and full screen windows. It's something you can use again. Because from Android 12 to 14, all of that was broken. It was completely non-functional. Unless you did all of this extra like flashing and ADB and installed other apps and taskbar and second screen and all this other stuff. So I'm hoping...
Downloading the update as we speak, by the way.
Hey, there we go. Myself,
2.61 gigabytes.
Ooh, ooh.
From 14 QRP 3, so the final release. Nice. It was the final security patch update, and then I'll jump into that. Yeah, because, I mean, like, seriously, I think there are benefits of jumping in on the beta, and I feel like even if I have to flash it back, if I do end up having to, like, opting out of it and going back to stock, that's fine. It's not as big of a deal. Most of my data is backed up anyways. I'm good. But yeah, no, I'm excited. Yeah. Michelle's been doing really a lot of good work. Especially if you guys follow him on X, he's been posting a lot of his, findings, a lot of his, information in there. So, the hope is there. We'll have to see how we go. We're getting close to Google I/O. May is around the corner. Mm-hmm. We're like literally about a month away. Can't believe
how
we're
crazy
there
is
already.
That?
I know. Like we're talking about like the fact that we're in Q2 already and things are, like, you know, the humane pin, the humane AI pin is already, reviews are starting to drop. You know, we're getting betas and stuff. Like, and we'll talk about that. We'll cover it. There's a lot of things kind of being
there's
there.
There's a lot to talk about there.
Apple dropping in some massive caveats with allowing us to be able to reuse old iPhone parts. Like, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that the whole shenanigans of them borking devices when it realizes it's from a different serial number?
Again, it's Apple playing shenanigans with the expectations or the spirit of these laws and regulations that are coming out of the EU.
Loose adaptation to the spirit of the...
An interpretive dance.
Exactly.
Of how they're going to respond
to
these
regulations. Tim Cook, he's just doing the, look, nothing in my hand.
I don't know what that means, Tim. Tim, what does that mean? You got to use words.
Suddenly he's John Cena. So, like you can't see this. Like, sorry,
right. Only in the EU. Why that was the thing. So, if you follow someone like a Hugh Jeffries, who has been scaling back some of his video production, much to my disappointment, because he's one of the channels. I don't love gadget destruction porn channels. Like, yeah, if you try to break a phone, you'll probably succeed. I don't understand why you burn a screen and then try and crack the back glass. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. I like iFixit. I like Hugh Jeffries. I like people that take a considered approach to disassembly with an eye towards repair. Yep. And Hugh Jeffries, I want to hold as being primarily responsible for iFixit changing their scoring. Because iFixit would only look at the hardware of a device and they would grade the repairability on the hardware. But Hugh Jeffries has been out for years saying, hey, it doesn't matter if you can crack this open easily, if when you put a new part in, the phone won't recognize it because Apple has serialized and software coded those parts. So he does these wonderful videos. Every time a new iPhone comes out, he has to buy two. Because what he'll do is take the screens, which we know are Apple-approved official screens because they were in the iPhones, and he'll swap them back and forth between two different phones, and you get to see, like, oh, Apple's kind of being scummy about this stuff when it comes to repair parts. So Apple is going to start opening up part of this process you can get used parts, you can use them in a repair. But, of course, there's still going to be some here's the Ars Technica article that I shared with you earlier. It's convenient timing because they want the headlines. They're being sued by the DOJ. They're dealing with new regulations in the EU, but
notable timing. Exactly.
So I want to kind of just read right. While noting that the pairing is critical to preserve the privacy, security, and safety of an iPhone, Apple states it has worked for 2 years to allow for reusing Face ID and Touch ID sensors, as well as moving part calibration from its remote repair certification tools onto the iPhone itself. As a result, select iPhone models this fall will allow for reusing biometric sensors and other parts. So really, it's one of these moving forward when you buy a new iPhone, the iPhone will do a similar version of part and serialized software
authentication,
but it doesn't help you on an older device. And
which surprisingly, those would be the ones that you'd end up doing the repairs on, not the brand new spanking one that just came out. No, I get it. It's like we finally adopted USB-C, but again, USB-C is only on the 15 forward. It's not going to come out on anything in the past. The moves that they do is always kind of like a shady. Yeah, it's like we'll lean into it a little, but we're going to keep one foot out the door because that's how we play. We never give you the whole experience the way it should be. Like, it should just be, if it's an Apple certified part from an Apple's device, just because you're moving it from one device to the other, there is no reason for you to lose that functionality, because now you have to just take it to Apple and Apple can replace it for you, because they are doing that. They have the keys. They have the way of resetting those codes and authenticating them. They're just not letting us as the consumer or third-party repair shops be able to do so. Even if they've been trained, even if they're using original parts, again, which makes more of a case for the DOJ with the whole walled garden concept going on.
Yeah.
You know, thou shall only come to my repair shop to fix thou's phone.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tesla, to a certain point, does the same. But at least Tesla allows third-party repair shops to do repairs on their cars. They don't lock it out.
Yeah,
there are shops out there if people want to invest to open up shops to be able to do that.
Because lots of people like to make, oh, well, what about this or what about that? And I think one of the things that also it gets in the way of Apple's optics, mm-hmm. where if you go through a certification as a repair shop, if you go through a certification so that you can be an authorized Apple repair facility, Apple doesn't let you do a whole lot in your shop. And they also demand audits of all your customer data. And you have to give it to Apple if you want to play ball. And you're like, for a company that's all about like security and privacy, man, they sure demand a lot of their partners in giving up what is sort of proprietary business information on their clientele and on their repair practices. So it's that, I think, is really the bigger issue is, you know, Tesla, they can do some things that I think a lot of people are a little frustrated by, or they just don't have the same kind of infrastructure as like GM has for shipping out repair parts and having, you know,
third-party accessories or parts to the like non-Tesla manufactured parts for their cars. To a certain point.
So there can definitely be some frustrating things there. It's just I don't know of another company on the planet that demands as much in certifying someone to do repairs on their products as Apple does. That to me is why all of this is kind of a bridge too far. And whenever Apple plays ball with one of these new regulations or trying to improve its own image, they just want the headlines that, well, now Apple supports right to repair. They never did. They demanded right to repair laws in California resembled what their business would prefer.
Yeah.
They didn't support right to repair. They twisted California's right to repair law. So that's the major difference that I always have to kind of point to politically is we're facing mountains of e-waste. Apple's business practices are taking precedence over their claims about trying to protect the environment.
Actually, speaking of which, I forgot the name of the brand. I think it was at The Verge that just put out a video on a pair of earbuds that allow you to change the batteries on them.
Yeah, is the Fair.
Yes, thank you. The Fairphone company. The Fair company. Yeah. The one that made the Fairphone. When I saw that, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, I was thinking, how cool is that? I mean, yes, they're a little chunky, but like, still, you get a replaceable battery. You change the battery on these buds, and you'll never have the need to throw them away. As long as software gets updated, you should be able to enjoy them for a long, long time. I mean, they're not coming to the US and they're not necessarily cheap, but still easily, single-handedly with pliers, probably just be able to open it up, take the battery out, put in a new battery, and you're ready to go. I mean, obviously rechargeable batteries, but you don't, you know, what the goal essentially is for them not to become obsolete, like you said, basically e-waste. Like we have, I have a substantial library of earbuds that I don't have enough ears for. That is just basically, seriously, like, what do we do with them? I try to, like, whenever I'm able to, I try to give them away, like, to my nieces, my nephews, my mom, my in-laws, everybody trying to get a pair of buds, you know, let's just all listen well as best as possible. And I have some buds here that I can't talk about right now, but like, yeah, I mean, in theory, there's a lot of things I'll, it's like,
I know I'm writing the embargo. Oh no, there's stuff I can't talk about. I want to talk about this stuff. Oh gosh.
No, I mean, like it's just, to me, it's more like, okay, like, okay. So the reality of what I'm trying to say is like, look, we are in an environment right now where our smartphones have no longer have replaceable batteries. All of our tech that we're getting, be it smartwatches, be it glasses, be it whatever, they all are built in with a battery that has a lifespan that if you can't change at some point, you're going to be frustrated with how short the battery life is. If you're not on an iPhone and suddenly your device starts getting throttled because the battery supposedly is too old to handle full performance from the phone. Anyways, you know, shenanigans apart from there. It becomes e-waste. It's a tough thing. Like if you don't trade it in for it to get recycled, and I'm not going to take away from Apple saying that they don't try to recycle parts out of their old iPhones. They've been doing that for some time. But again, still, like there's still a substantial amount of their products that still have mined parts or the, you know, things that are using rare earth elements still. I mean, obviously. So anyways, the right to repair has always been I'm a big proponent of it. I love that when we had the Pixel, was it the Pixel 5a that Omar's using a while back, like probably a year or so ago, he broke the screen. Mm-hmm. The screen was totally trashed. I went on iFixit. I bought the kit for it. I bought the replacement screen. It was installed in less than 10 minutes and the phone is good.
Yeah.
It didn't have to open it up from the, I didn't have to use any heat gun or whatever. Literally the front screen, there was hinges all around the outside. You popped it over, you took it out, took the cable out, put it back in, boop, boop, close it, and voila.
And done.
And the Pixel is still alive to this day. Probably will get Android 15 even. So like, you know, but those are the little things I appreciate. But, you know, there are so many other devices that you try to replace and you have to go through the back. You have to go through the main board, disassemble the entire thing.
Yeah.
It's built on such a condensed sandwich process that just it's not really meant to be repaired. And if you are able to fix it to get it to run again, it's never the same. You lose a lot of, you know, you'll never be able to put it back again. You're not a machine. You're not a factory line of being able to put it together. So
And we can definitely point to numerous sort of claims from manufacturers that definitely read as disingenuous.
Yeah.
Like, we're so concerned about the environment, we're taking the charger out of the box, but we're not going to let you swap the battery easily.
No, but we'll sell you that charger in a separate box, and we'll ship it to you separately.
Ship it separately. Yeah, exactly. No math expert or anything, but that math ain't mathin'.
Okay, we take the charger out of the box, but the only that charger that we sell you can give you that extra faster charging speed. So we're like, that makes perfect sense. So therefore, now I'm buying this device, I'm paying for it full price. You didn't drop the price point, and I'm paying an extra something for it, paying extra shipping for it, and it comes in a separate box and more than likely ships separately. Yeah, I'm
not great.
Not great at all. Not great at all, my friend. It's not a good track record, but we'll have to see how Apple kind of gets through all of this. And we're quite a bit away from the iPhone, the new iPhone to come out. But what I will say is that if the DOJ is able to get them to at least sync up their releases with their products across in Europe and in the US, so where they're giving the ability of installing third-party browsers, the ability of installing third-party app stores without having to unlock or jailbreak your iPhone, I think those would be substantial features that the US market could benefit from, and more being a little bit more competitive. I'll say that maybe making Apple to be a little bit more competitive, having to push more and do more where, like, again, 2024, not being able to put the icon where you want it is weird.
Yeah, like, that's not, yeah. That, like, oh, I'm so excited that you finally have the Android home screen from,
like, seriously,
Gingerbread. because we don't need to stay on this much longer. I really do want folks to go just, it's not a super, super long article, but Kevin Purdy over at Ars Technica, definitely catch that article. And it's coming in line of like, it was Oregon and Colorado have their own right to repair laws that are coming up that are going to be stricter than California's even. So really, I just want an Apple that, I'm tired of an Apple that's too big to care. Because right now, that's what it feels like Apple is, that they're so big. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Are you going to not buy an iPhone? I don't think so. I need an Apple that feels like they need to compete.
Yeah.
And that's not what we have right now.
It's one of those weird, like, I feel like, yeah, you're I'm not going to say you're coasting, but you're really not being challenged. Therefore, you don't feel the need to innovate.
And they're coasting.
Oh, no, I know. But again, I'm saying, like, we talked about this last week, or even on Monday. We're
a bit.
It's like, no, but like, it's a reality of complacent success to a certain point. Like, you've reached the goal and you don't have to worry too much. Like, you're waiting. And what's going to end up happening is you're losing that groundbreaking, the experience that people loved about you back, you know, during the early days when the iPhone, the iPad, you know, the MacBook M series, the Air, all of those things that were just innovating and they were trying to bring in new ways of interacting with your tech. So, either way, I really feel like hopefully we'll start seeing some more here in the U.S. just from a usability, opening up the third-party watches, to being able to actually use them correctly, having the option of using something other than the Apple Watch, and not tying the Apple Watch. I mean, there's no reason the Apple Watch can only be in one ecosystem, but I understand the way it's set up right now. I just want to see more competition and better competition so that we can all benefit, get better tech, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll have to see. That was a good article. I think we'll make sure to, I'll try to go back in and put it in the description of the video here on YouTube if you guys would like to check that out. And it, again, it's on Ars Technica. You'll be able to find it. And I think you said it was hold on. I think they used the I forgot the author's name. Kevin Purdy.
Oh, yep. Kevin Purdy. Yeah.
No, for sure. But yeah, so, you know, we talked a little bit about Android 15. I think we're both installing the latest update. I'm going to download.
Who's going to get there first?
Well, I'm pretty sure you are because I'm on a 2.6 gig file. And if we all know how long and these updates take on
optimizing
this phone,
your devices, it's going to take a while.
I'll ask you. Are you still getting the resume function?
So I purposely like tapped through. I don't know if it did that really obnoxious. Let me stop the update to ask you if you really want to do the update.
Because for me right now, it's just downloading and it hasn't given me the resume, but it did do the resume when I went on the last update. I'm pretty sure it will do it on my side, but you're already on 15.
So much.
It makes no sense. I went into the system. I chose to click check update. I said download and install.
Yeah, why but TK, would you pause? Hold on. But are you sure you want to do an update?
All these years.
That's the question.
Asking, oh my God, I got it again. Dang it. Resume.
You got the resume?
No, I got restart.
What?
Yes.
No way.
I kid you not. It says restart.
Oh, you're such a jerk.
How did that happen? I got restart. I went straight up. And I started to download after you.
You are a butt.
I'm like, something is wrong with the matrix.
No. Help
check the walls.
I'm taking this one personal.
Google, what are you doing?
Like, what are you doing?
I don't know. I can't do it. My voice can't just go up that high. I was like, what are you doing? Google, what are you doing? I don't know. It's
That's
rebooting.
Hilarious.
It'd be funny.
No,
if
it mine's going to just it, optimizing. Optimizing, optimizing, optimizing.
I'm just hoping it restarts and it does it right. It's like the excitement on my side. But and then
because I also have my NextDock over here, so as soon as this thing reboots, I'm going to be trying to.
You know what? I was thinking about NextDock. I was thinking about them like a couple of days ago. I got an email from a company for it was a unique, like I think it was like a Raspberry Pi computer or something something to the effect of that. But their business model was essentially connecting a Raspberry Pi to something like a NextDock, and I was like, wait, we've had this for years. Where is the concept of where is the creativity? Where is that unique experience? I don't know. Either way, but we haven't heard anything from them recently, haven't? Or have you seen anything from them?
No, the last thing I saw was they weren't even still doing batches of their new larger. I think it's a 17 inch,
mm-hmm.
but it's the one where they've got the charge pad okay. right by the screen. But that's sort of been kind of out for a while. It's not new.
No. My main thing is
I don't know. I was really hoping that we'd see like a follow up of the next pad. Mm-hmm. That's the one that I'd love to see, sort of the tablet-y version, get a little refinement and get that kind of
That was sorted, a cool gadget. But... It was an interesting form factor. But I like the magnetic configuration, the connection to the phone. It's easy, and it's like an instant tablet out of your phone, which made perfect sense to me.
The thing I'd love to see, and I know it would be heavier and more expensive, but same form factor,
mm-hmm.
but put in a battery. Because not every phone can drive that LCD above half brightness. Because as soon as you start pulling too much power from the phone, it shuts off the display.
Aha!
So that
I am booted.
Oh, you are such a jerk.
The Pixel.
Oh,
how did that work?
Oh,
brother, what up? Well, I want to make sure I'm on Android 15 here, because this could potentially be okay. March 5th update. Ah, come on. There was an installation problem.
Oh no.
That's
why. I got a chance. So you're saying I've got a chance.
There's an update again. Let's click it again and download. Oh, for the love of God. See, these are the system update downloading. Okay, so it told me to restart as if it finished, but it didn't. It restarted so quickly. That's why I kind of got skeptical a little bit that reboot, it didn't even say optimizing apps. You know what I mean?
See, that's where I'm all stuck, is it's doing the optimization still.
Yeah, mine. So okay, so we're downloading again. We're back to square zero. Hopefully, this download doesn't crash our stream.
Jeez, Google just can't do anything right.
Well, hey. At least you have your
no,
faith.
No, you know
your
what?
Faith in your process works again.
I just think like we should just get iPhones. You know,
I've been thinking.
I can finally have blue text bubbles, and.
We should buy our iPhone and make sure that VPN our entire home network to the European country of our choice, and make it so that our iPhones can be running thinking that they're in Europe somewhere. So as long as you check in once a day on a network that's configured in Europe, the iPhone should be perfectly fine for the rest of the day being doing whatever it wants, because it'll think you're just traveling, right? It won't have that insight unless Tim coded that feature into the system.
I think someone was saying that it might also like be checking GPS.
Oh, that blows. They're going to pull that much data off your phone just to make sure that you're that.
I don't have that.
I take that back.
Confirmed.
I wouldn't think it's too far fetched that would be a true statement. I would hope that they are not going that far to just validate, make sure that you can't, you know, like, or like the moment you leave the EU, like you go to UK, right? Even in London, they'll be like, no, you don't get it there because you're not in the EU anymore, or something to that effect. Because, you know, either way, we'll have to see how things kind of pan out when iOS 18 and Android 15 comes to the iPhone.
Oh, I got a reboot.
Woo-woo!
All right, I mean, it's going to reboot.
Yeah, rebooting. Well, I'm still down.
Here we go.
I'm going to let it sit and do it.
Here we go.
Reboot and optimize.
It's doing it.
Reboot and optimize. But yeah, no, I mean, other than that, for me, it's been a lot of driving, a lot of enjoying my new ride. I finally got the update for full self-driving this last night.
Nice.
Tesla did this weird... They released a new version of the car. The car came out in early January, so people were able to order it. Some people started getting their cars in February, and it was like releasing. But up till yesterday, no new Model 3 2024 edition had the ability of using full self-driving. It was not available. The software would just not download. And it was limited by Tesla, and everybody was getting them. Everybody got their free testing and whatever. And it drove me a little bit crazy because, like, people are paying for this feature. Yeah, like, why would you not give it to me? What's wrong? Do you think the car can't handle it? But anyways, long story short, I'm sitting waiting for Omar yesterday at school, low in like in the little down arrow on the car shows up. I'm like, yes, turned on my hotspot and I started to download on my phone because I did not care. I was running it right there. I wanted to update in the middle of the road. No, I just wanted to download the update.
Which is fair.
Yeah, it's just it's weird getting like you get your new phone. And like I'll say, like, remember back in the old days when we used to back when we would get like the early alpha or beta version of devices from Sony before everybody else, and we would be doing videos on them, and then there's like a certain feature that's just not ready. And you're like, I really want to, and like, and you, then you end up basically focusing so hard on that one feature and thinking like, how can I get this to run? That was the feeling for me, because all I got was like auto steer, and when I went up to San Jose and came down, that would have been perfect on the 5 going up. But auto steer does decent, so either way, anyways, it was nice, it's good, it's here, it's installed. That actually was an exciting part. That was like the highlight of my day yesterday and my drive today in and out of work. So that was primarily the biggest thing. I pushed out a video on that as well, because I I do accessories for cars now. That's what I also do. But I only do them once every 3 years or so, because that's how often I change.
I feel like I'll be doing like mini PCs and laptops
I have a couple of companies hitting me up. One of them is the one that you worked with before, and I'm kind of debating if I want to respond back. Only because it's the one that you talked about, where you were having concerns with the software that was running on it,
and but the malware that they shipped it with.
To me, it's more of like I don't feel comfortable getting into a conversation where the number one thing I'm going to have to make sure built into it is to make sure to nuke the machine before I start anything and then restart it up and rebuild in.
That's what I spent a good chunk of today doing on this box right here from this brand. Right.
Oh, it's the same one
there.
Yeah.
And yeah, right. It's now got a completely wiped, totally fresh, new image of Windows 11 on there that I installed from a Rufus boot media disk.
And the backup and restore function for the drivers and everything like that work okay? Perfect?
Yeah, that worked great. So, again, I'm not doing anything with their image or their software.
No,
but
I know.
Windows has its own... Yeah, Windows has its own driver dump. And so the trickiest thing about these mini PCs is I don't think there's... Or I shouldn't say there isn't, but I haven't found many that do like an easy place to get your Wi-Fi and your network drivers and stuff like that. So if you nuke these machines, a lot of stuff doesn't work. Like your network, your NIC doesn't work and your Wi-Fi doesn't work. So what do you have? You have a machine that can't connect to the internet. So what's the point of having this mini PC? So I dumped the drivers. I reinstalled Windows. It's a little Core i9 12900H. It's a decently powerful machine.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any of their software on there anymore, and I feel better about that. So I'll have some videos out on Ace Magic, sort of without Ace Magic software.
I mean, so the only thing I think that I feel like their software is primarily going to be probably just as a GUI to just download, like the interface to be able to download the right drivers, updating the installers. Like it's just
that's what I mean is like they don't have anything like that.
Yeah,
you can't go to Ace Magic and say, "Hey, I need drivers for this model of mini PC." It's not like an HP
or like an MSI or an Asus, anything like that.
Which so I think part of the issue is like. When I originally talked to Ace Magic, they were very apologetic and they sent me their press releases and like website stuff saying, "Hey, we know we're acknowledging this issue." But their big solution was, "Let us just send you a whole new Windows image that you can flash on the machine." And there doesn't seem to be a resource for getting drivers for things on the machine. So that to me is a little problematic. I don't like the Ace Magic Windows image because it abbreviates and cuts out some of the Windows startup protocols. So, like, it kind of gets you, like, right into the desktop a lot faster than when you set up Windows 11 from an official Windows Media install. And, like, that had Chrome pre-installed with its own Chrome updater. And they also preload things like their RGB control software, which is one of the apps that some people have said might have been
the source
malware-y, or again, might have been hiding some of this bad software.
That is
so that's the problem for me, is if you just want to completely install Windows fresh, you can't do it unless you had the machine up and running first, dump the drivers, then reinstall Windows.
Okay. That just sounds like and you're still missing the core software, like you said. Like, you don't have RGB anymore, and I know how sad that makes you. But
I couldn't care at all.
Let's be honest with each other. Come on, man, RGB.
But I mean, like, it's one of those things where it's like, now this completely reframes who I think might be a good fit for one of these machines. I can't send this to my aunt. Like, if she needs to replace the SSD, or if she just needs to reinstall Windows, unless she can just do a repair from the image that I've installed with the you know, there is a support partition now, because Windows makes its own little repair partition. So you could do it that way. But if the SSD dies, you have to put in a new SSD. Where do you get the drivers from? You have to flash the Ace Magic image and then install Windows.
You don't even have access to the Ace Magic image. You don't have a download site for it.
If you reach out to the folks at Ace Magic, they will send you that Windows image. That's what they did for me. Okay. But that think about what that is, though. I need to put in a new SSD. I need to reach out to them. It's probably going to take them 2 days at least to get back to you. If that's like perfect back and forth talking to China. Mm-hmm. So then you get this image. You install it. It's an ISO. Do you know people in your circles of family and friends that know what to do with an ISO file? Anyway, you install the image. Wow. Then you have to know how to dump the drivers to then make your own boot media, go back to a fresh, clean, totally wiped, totally nuked build of Windows, and then reinstall the drivers from there. I don't know many people
dance. It's not... I don't think that's the intention of the way that's not the intention of the product, the way it's supposed to work from a consumer standpoint.
It's not how it's marketed.
You're supposed to be able to boot it up and use it. Yeah. And the reality is, some people may have been using it not realizing the malware was there. That's the other. Not being able to trust.
Frustration.
That this brand new clean machine doesn't start you off on a bad footing. It's a weird. It's an awkward place to be. Yeah. And a weird conversation when you're trying to review the product with that being the message in there. So it's a tough one. Either way, I mean, I'll say this. The last Geekom that I reviewed was an absolute blast. I was very happy with what they've done with Ryzen in there and just getting the experience to be very nice, very functional, portable.
Remind me, which was it? So the 7840?
Yeah, the 7840H is the last one they gave. And then, so right before that, they gave me the A series, which is the Air model, the Air 12. Mm-hmm. That, my friend, is now beautifully working at my in-laws as their brand new PC. And they were so happy with it. It's like night and day. And they're like, wow, it's so fast. I'm like, yes. And this is the underpowered version, and you're loving this.
That is not a beefy machine, but it is snappy for doing.
It is absolutely quiet.
How much overbuying of compute power all of our family and friends have done, and when you get them on a cute little mini PC, because what is it? Is it the N2?
It's the N200. I want to say,
is it Alder Lake?
One second.
I'm trying to do this from memory, and I really just should have looked up the parts list before we started the podcast. We're real good at doing the tech, guys.
Hey, man, the Air 12.
But I think I'm gonna send my.
It is the Elder Lake, but it's the N100, not the N200.
N100. Okay.
N100 Elder Lake 12th gen.
16 gigs of RAM.
Yep, 16, 512, yeah. M.2, and Windows Home.
And you want a little browser, web searching, document writing kind of machine.
Or even a NAS running type of PC. I mean, for the price
point. Oh, that's what I was doing with my Mini 11, yeah.
It is, for $250.
It makes for a great headless server.
Exactly. And you don't really need to have to do much. Just set it up, get it running, and then, you know, VPN into it or Telnet into it. What I'll say is this. As much as I wasn't able to do with it for the things I wanted to do with it, I was very happy to be able to get it at home that was perfect for it. And my in-laws don't need a laptop. They don't need portability. They just need something set up in their office so that they can just get on it and do their work and whatever they need to install Norton, set that up, ran a few virus checks and all of that, made sure everything is good for them. And of course I kept the more beefy one on my side just from a standpoint. And that one now is connected to my TV here in the office. So that's now my TV. Cause it's just, that's what it's intended for. It's a mini PC and it mounts. So that's like mount that sucker up there. So yeah, Geekom for me has been really, really good. I've enjoyed their tech. I've enjoyed their products, and you know, we'll have to see what other products come in. I'm going to debate the Ace Magic one. I forgot the name of the model that they were talking about, but I think it was like an i7, an Intel side, not the Ryzen side. So, but we'll see.
So, according to them, they have sorted out their
software,
imaging, and QA. And their distribution. Mm-hmm. So hopefully their manufacturing chain has corrected for this problem. Mm-hmm. It makes me anxious that there are likely still models available
in retailers and stuff. Retailer, yeah.
Because I was just going to say, the whole business model is take an older laptop chip and put it in a little mini PC frame. Mm-hmm. And then sell that, and those can kind of live as long as there's stock of them. So they can live in storage for a really long time. You just kind of sell them off or put them on sale or whatever. And, you know, like, for example, the one that I just held up here is 12th gen.
Okay.
You know, we're now at technically 15th gen as we switch over from Core i series to the Core Ultra 7s and stuff. I don't love Intel's new naming convention, but this is now technically a 3-generation-old CPU.
Yeah.
So if I'm having issues with this, and this is a relatively newer model from Ace Magic, I have to believe that there were probably issues before that are still sitting in warehouses ready to be shipped to consumers.
I would hope that if they do have that they would have a day one or a day, like an initial setup update that just pushes an override, like it overrides everything. I would hope so, but
that's really not the way that Windows sets itself up, though. And I think that's what's frustrating is
it doesn't check for updates as it's setting itself. You have to go in manually.
It's not checking. Well, I mean, it does. It will check for an update when you install when you boot up Windows. But it's not an image from the it's not looking for an image from Ace Magic.
It's not looking
for that as an OTA. So if there's already a problem with what Ace Magic's image is doing, then Microsoft's just going to go on and do its updates to Windows, but that doesn't really address the problem with the Ace Magic.
That's true.
So it's really complicated and it's really messy, and it makes me really sad because now I still think these are, like, if you get a good sale on the hardware that you want, people in our audience, I'm not afraid of them. You know, literally even just ripping out the SSD, putting in their own, flashing a Linux distro if they want to run, like, Ubuntu or something like that. Like, the hardware is so good. The price to performance is so good on these things. Mm-hmm. For tinkerers, for techies, stuff like that, go nuts. If you don't mind playing tech support for your family and friends, this could be an amazing... what I have here, though it had malware on it when it was sent to me, would be ridiculous overkill for my nephew. Like, even the games he plays, a 12th gen Core i9, plenty capable of playing playing the games that he's playing right now.
But you end up being that focal point.
But I have to do that for him, yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't necessarily just say, hey, Merry Christmas or something like that. You know, congrats on that stuff. But yeah, no, I'm with you. It's a tough one. It's a tough one with, especially with mini PCs. But that was the first time I've ever heard of that being a case with any company. I typically, like I said, I don't run them where I connect them to my network right away. I run them independent for a while. And I try to test them independently because typically I don't have anything connected over the network that they would rely on. Anything and everything I need to download is on the internet, not on the network. You know what I mean? Like, unless I'm pulling files for editing videos and stuff. And even then I'm usually using my 4 terabyte SSD. So I don't really do. Yeah. Either way. So hopefully we'll be able to see that video that come out from you, in the near future.
So the laptop one is available on Patreon. It will go public tomorrow.
Okay, cool.
So I ended up just getting stuck because I thought another laptop video was going to publish this week, and then that didn't happen because embargo. That'll go live tomorrow. What I'm reaching out to Shannon, and I'm hoping I can maybe pin her down because I'd love to talk to Snubs. About security issues. And some of these things, I mean, like on one of these systems from Ace Magic, there is a small possibility that I got a false positive on software that just wasn't properly
certified. So their certification keys weren't valid. Is that what you're saying?
So it could be that it's not malware, but that's still not good because it's kind of a gaping security hole in how they flash and image their machines if they aren't properly. What is the word that I'm looking for? Not licensed. I don't know. Anyway, I want to talk to her about that. I feel like there's some other hinky things that give me a little pause in recommending Ace Magic just straight out of the box right now. But hopefully I can have a really cool conversation with someone who really knows WTF she's talking about cybersecurity. So that might be the follow-up to these reviews is just, what do you do? And how do you handle this?
You could technically reflash the actual original image from Ace Magic and then go back and see to be able to test it out. You're right. The good thing is you're able to do that. The bad thing is I think I'm having major problems installing Android 15 beta on my device. Second time, finished downloading, rebooted.
So there is still, I'll spoil it for you. Spoilers here for Pixel 8 Pro. The desktop mode as I demoed it is still intact.
Cool.
So we still have the working app drawer. We still have floating windows that can resize.
If I can get it to run on my 8 Pro without having to format it, because I don't want to format. I think it failed twice. And the reason I know that is it didn't give me
to flash it fresh.
Yeah,
it's such a pain. And I know that pain. But you might just want to kind of nuke it and start over. Carl Gunderson brings up a great point because I just pulled up the article from Bleeping Computer. Mm-hmm. Did Snubs cover Lenovo's pre-installed being malware? So Lenovo has had some issues in the past too, where their management suite has been flagged as malware. Literally today, Intel and Lenovo servers impacted by 6-year-old BMC flaw. So for 6 years, Lenovo servers have just had this massive security problem. And like, they're just detailing it now. I mean, like,
I don't feel very comfortable with the fact that I have a Lenovo PC sitting next to me, but yes. I have the X1 Fold with said
switch. I remember a long time ago, there was something wrong with like a Dell image that had, whether or not we would have called it malware at the time. I believe there was an issue with HP workstations back a long time. I'm talking like Windows 2000 era. Oh,
wow.
I need to be frank with my dissatisfaction or my frustration with this Ace Magic.
Okay.
But it's also not to say that, like, the last MSI that I reviewed, it didn't have malware on it, but I had to nuke that machine, reinstall Windows, go to the MSI site, get drivers, and install fresh because I hated the pre-installed software and the Norton utility that would not uninstall on that machine. And, like, that's not installing malware. Totally correct, but it was like that machine was not functional for me until I gutted it.
Yeah.
And we've had these other actual malware issues with major brands. There's a begrudging respect that Ace Magic hasn't just shuttered that name. Because it would be very easy, I think, for them to just like, now we're Delta Magic. Totally different company. Not Ace Magic, Delta Magic. That's, there you go. Now you can trust that what we put out, because it's totally different company. Totally different company, guys. That they are actually trying to correct for their missteps and reaching out to customers and offering partial and sometimes full refunds depending on the machines and the people affected. Like, I guess. And I want to frame this in the right kind of like context where we've had bigger problems with more name brand manufacturers, but it's still like the buyer beware. It sucks some of that really good fun out of getting a good bargain. It makes bargains in general feel scammy.
Yeah.
And that's what really makes me upset. Is
gotta like, watch out for that catch. Yep.
Now, with any machine that comes in, if it's a Minis Forum, if it's a B-Link, if it's a Geekom, I'm probably going to rip out the drive and start doing forensic scanning on it before I start setting it up to review. And I don't want to have to do that. It's really time consuming. And I want to just be able to crack it out of the box and have fun with it. And that's what I want people to expect. That they can just pop it out of the box and set it up and play Spider-Man on it. You know, like it just makes me sad that it's kind of, I don't know, it's eroding the confidence of the product.
It's a little bit of a chink in the armor, and unfortunately it makes you question, and that's not a good thing. It's not
I
a position.
I don't have to think about it.
Well, I mean, because it's adding an extra step in the process that we have come to build some trust in. That, you know, it is a new machine, fresh out of the factory, fresh installed, fresh drivers, fresh everything. You shouldn't have to be feeling like you're already behind on knowing what's going on and trusting it, because typically people are going to just set it up and start installing programs and going for it with it, not realizing they're starting off. And till, like you said, Norton may not be, it's not malware software, but not being able to uninstall it and remove it. Is, let's say you just don't like Norton. Maybe you're a McAfee type of a guy or a Casper. Was it Casper Tech? No, Casperini. I forgot the name of that third. There's other, you know, antivirus software isn't there. It is a concern. Yeah, building things into system. Like they do that also on Android. Like you'll buy a phone. Again, one of the reasons why we get unlocked is like, T-Mobile pushed out a new authentication of profiling into their devices that is turned on to try to gauge user usage, to try to build up profiles on users. And I was like, that is not
great.
Nope.
Don't love that.
Nothing against the company itself, but from the early days, I'll say maybe 5 or 6 years or so, ever since the whole CID concept going on where they're running analytics in the background, collecting data in the background. And it is actually it's a program that runs in the background on Android devices that are T-Mobile branded Android devices. And specifically with Samsung devices, I used to always do that. I would always go in there and then just uninstall that, disable it. They're basically their ad tracking function. And they just kept putting it back. It comes back and it would cause some issues every once in a while.
Yeah.
But again, like these just leaves a bad taste. And from that point on, I'm like, I don't want to feel like I'm to get a little bit of savings on this device, I'm compromising my personal information. Like you need to know that, but they don't say that. It's not in any of their advertising. Like, hey, we'll give you a better deal, but we're going to collect data.
It's that cynic in me where it's like, if they don't detail anything, technically, they're not afoul of any FTC guidelines. If we just don't tell you we're ripping you off, if we don't tell you should have an expectation of privacy, then you don't.
The biggest thing, though, seriously, where we only find out about breaches and data loss and data compromisation months after it's happened, and the only thing we always get is a year subscription to data monitoring.
Credit monitoring,
like that's supposed to fix it. Like, no,
it's so lame.
It is absolutely. But no, either way, I wish you the best of luck with the Ace Magic PC. I'll share with you the link later on to the unit I don't think it was directly them. I think it's an agency that's reaching out. Because that's typically how it goes. Yeah, rarely do we work directly with a company. Geekom I do, but I think most of the ones are usually through agencies. And then, yeah, I may be getting back into e-bikes and scooters again.
Nice.
I got to make space.
No, that's great.
I don't have space.
Oh, it's tough.
I haven't.
I've had to turn down a few. And like, it's like, oh, I really want to try that bike, but I can't build another bike right now.
The one I'm really interested in, it looks like a motorcycle. It looks like a smaller motorcycle side, the body style. So way better for off-roading. Like the tires are, even though it's bigger, it's just the structure of the bike just feels more functional as an off-road bike. And I have all the equipment, the correct equipment and so on. And it was like, it's fun. It's just I find sometimes like a lot of these companies, they reach out, but they don't really do their due diligence to see what kind of work that you've done on other products like theirs. So I always weird, like I got the question of like, what kind of video would you do for us? I was like, check out my other ones.
You reached out to me.
I know. And I feel like I realized that the whole vanilla emails and stuff like that, and some of them don't even bother. I mean, really, it's just like, hi, dear kind of thing. Either way, I'm grateful that they're reaching out. And I do appreciate it. And I felt like, you know, if you were communicating and you're reaching out for this subject, I'm assuming you found me because you looked me up and you saw that I've had other content similar to what you want.
I've stopped assuming.
Yeah. No, either way. But yeah, so hopefully we'll see. This summer looks like your buddy's going to be spending some time outside. Not today. Not today was hot. Today was like 92.
Today got like, toasty. Yeah.
And
it's going to rain again this weekend.
That's how we do it. We get summer, we get winter in the same week. But yeah, and I don't know, like I kind of now that it kind of got warm to like 90 something like that, I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, let's take a step back and let's go back to rain. I want more rain. A little bit more at least to kind of just get us ready for the hot summer. We don't know. We don't know how things are going to be. But
I think it's going to get pretty gross this summer. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. No question about that. What I was going to actually ask is, you did a little collab with a buddy of ours. I just saw.
Yeah.
Ricky.
R-A-C-K-Y, the YouTube tech guy.
Yes. Hashtag not sponsored by the R-A-C-K-Y YouTube tech guy. But he is a buddy of ours. Yeah. No, Ricky. It's a thing that you and I spoke about before, like a while back with wireless charging and so on. So that was a nice collaboration.
So I reached out to a couple of friends, and like every time I would really try and put someone on the spot and say like, I mean, you say you like wireless charging, but you seem ill prepared for me. And this was back, especially during the OnePlus 11 and the OnePlus Open, because OnePlus was getting all of this, like, just getting savaged by people. We would be in the press meetups with OnePlus executives, with techie nerds going, I just really feel it's such a huge missed opportunity to make a premium phone that doesn't have wireless charging in it. It would be perfect and it needs to have this one feature. And like, they were hinging so much on this. So that's kind of where the impetus for this started. Cause every time I would really start poking at people to say like, well, why does it matter to you that much if you have real fast charging? Isn't that better? Like, oh, but I've already put coils all over my house. We're like, well, that sounds like kind of a waste of money then, doesn't it? It doesn't sound like you're defending the better technology. It sounds like you're upset about the money you've thrown at something that's less good. So Ricky came on. He was gracious enough to actually say, like, I like wireless charging and I like this because of these features. And we did a little twofer where on my channel, he's talking about why he likes wireless charging. On his channel, I'm talking about why I think fast wired charging, actual fast wired charging, is the preferable solution.
I fall in the camp between both of them. I'm not going to disagree and say that I'm not going to be disingenuous and say that I don't use wireless charging. It's a function that I use in my car on a daily basis when I'm driving. Yes, my phone goes into a charger. But outside of that conversation, I do heavily rely on wired charging. I am of the school that I just don't like charging my phone overnight. I don't think that's a function I need to do anymore. We don't need that. And I wake up in the morning, 5 o'clock, plug it in. By 6 o'clock, I'm done. And in most cases, the phone's already charged way ahead of when I actually pick it up. I love what OnePlus does with their watch as well. When it's down to like 10% or whatever, I put it on, and before I'm ready to go, it's already at like 80, 90% that I'm ready to go. I'll last another 2 or 3 days. when I went to San Jose last week, it lasted 4.5 days, like legit four and a half days on one. And I brought the charger, but I didn't even need it. I charged it when I got back to the house. I was good. I was so happy about that part. Cause that prior to that, that so would have been a tick watch only function that I've been able to do with anything that ran Wear OS the way it normally runs without the dual display was just not able to hit. Not even the Samsung watches that I've had. Although, again. So I'm glad to see that. That's a good video.
We had a fun chat. I have no wireless charger set up. I have zero. Marie has one. She doesn't use it. You get used to just you plug in a cable and it's charged faster and it runs cooler. And I really can't express enough. And this is me personally, and Ricky makes some other points. And I think if you're sort of in that mindset, you'll appreciate some of the points that he makes. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's the incredible practicality, how much less waste you accrue, and how much more affordable actual real fast charging is. Like, if you want to go fancy and get a OnePlus charger with two ports, support for up to like 100-watt charging, and proper support for QC and power delivery, that's a $50 charger. That's a little pricey. If you want a really nice Qi charger that just doesn't look like some kind of like medical pad stuck to the end of a USB cable, those things can be like $100 or $150.
Oh man.
And you still have to plug them into some kind of charger. It's like you didn't make this better, you just made it so much more expensive, and then there's so much more material that you'll discard when you're done using it.
Or if you end up getting the Realme/Oppo, or even OnePlus doesn't think released this one, but Realme and Oppo released this 50-watt PD charger that is thin, like this literally paper thin, and it just like,
oh, that's cute.
Come on, can we get it? Come on. Sony is just not going to, as long as you can see my face is, anyways, believe me when
just
I say.
Just hold it closer to your head.
Yeah, like this.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and the prongs kind of tucked in very nicely, very good, and has USB-C connector on the back, and it works perfectly, and it charges our OnePlus stuff very clean, and it charges our PD chargers with up to 50 watts. So to me, those are the multi-purpose and multifunctional ones that are like early generation, like even the OnePlus back when you used to have PD and SuperVOOC at the same charge.
Yeah, 65-watt
especially for the US one,
are still better,
absolutely, because I think they moved away from that. Now it's purely SuperVOOC. By the way, that used to be a requirement from T-Mobile. I didn't realize that till much later, that once they separated from the carriers, that went away.
Well, but that's what I was saying is like they put that charger in the box. It's not going to fast charge a Samsung. So if you only have that charger isn't as useful if you decide to eventually leave OnePlus and get another manufacturer.
Yeah.
But if you go to OnePlus and you get the two-port charger, that's a $50 charger, but it supports SuperVOOC, QC,
and PD,
and power delivery, and 65-watt power delivery.
That's good. So again, your MacBook.
You're climbing up into better laptops and stuff. Exactly. So it's like, I get it. The free charger you got in the box isn't as useful as it used to be when we had the Warp 65, but it's still a functional 2-amp charger. It'll slow charge other products. That's fine. $50 is not a crazy amount of money to spend on a high quality charger. I've got a Ugreen down here that I think was 40, you know, this is pretty reasonable. I don't understand AirVOOC anymore because you have an AirVOOC base, which is kind of an expensive stand to put the phone on.
And
but
you
what
still
do you
have to
plug it into
SuperVOOC charger because it's still, you're like, well, I mean, okay.
But so if you're already sitting close enough to a VOOC charger that you could put your phone
on the only thing you're saving yourself from is doing this. You're just basically going from this to this, and you're like,
and it charges your phone slower. So
slower. I mean, so yeah, no,
it's a 30-watt difference now.
It is absolutely 30-watt difference. but I was gonna mention Honor a few years back. They had the 100-watt wireless charger with their own proprietary dock and charger. But and that thing kind of also the fan kicked up like it's going out of style. No, don't get me wrong. Look, the wireless charging to a certain point is great for maybe just general top offs or something like that. Makes perfect sense. I wish there were more functional options that we got with wireless charging, like data transfer. Or something that makes it so that that connectivity, that proximity to a certain specific area
had more function,
has more function to it than just charging, and albeit slow charging. And again, we don't have Qi2 yet. We don't have magnetic backs unless you have specific cases and so on. So that entire ecosystem can definitely use some improvement. But I'm glad that you were able to get that collaboration going on, and always nice to
it was a fun pair of videos, and obviously, like, I take this stuff like to a political degree, but for the back and forth that Ricky and I had, it was a fun sort of debate to get into. I don't think either of us were really taking it that seriously, because also I don't think anything I said changed his mind either. His house is covered in coils, and he's got magnets and rings and stuff like that on all of his cases.
You remember that video we did with Josh when we talked about gestures versus buttons?
Yeah.
I was like, that's the genesis of all of this, if you think about it. But yeah, no, I mean, to this day now, we're all on gestures, no more buttons.
No more buttons.
Except for me on my Xiaomi 14 Ultra, I still have to use buttons because I like to use Nova over the Xiaomi launcher. Again, personal preference. It's just, I like Nova. I've had to live with the buttons.
Marie does still use button navigation. Yeah,
my wife as well.
So she has
she
a
doesn't
pixelate,
like gestures.
But
yeah, she doesn't like the gestures. Yeah, I mean,
not only doesn't like gestures, she really doesn't like her iPhone in part because of
gestures.
Yeah,
I wish they were more synchronized. But okay, so that was the video. What else are you working on this week? Other than making
embargo stuff.
Any embargoes for this week? Oh, okay.
No. I mean, I've got videos and things that I can't talk about yet. I've got some cool audio gear that I think people will really like. I got stuck on some microphones that, again, the manufacturer sent me early hardware, and it's like, if I show people what you've sent me, mm-hmm. it will look real bad for your product. What you sent me was not finished. And I
wasn't
feel
ready
like
for review. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like they're trying to, well, can't you just like talk about the features and stuff? And you're like, no, I can't. If you want me to demonstrate and talk about features and you don't want me just reading off your press release, I mean, if you want to sponsor a video, I guess no one will watch that video of me just reading off the specs and it's a mic. I guess it works. I don't know. They didn't want me to send out samples of what the mic sounds like. So I got the thing that sucks is like I started using one of them. I started testing it. It takes so long to troubleshoot. I mean, I spent days on these mics, going, hey, what's going on? Or why isn't this working?
Time, but
and
then it also takes time away from your other projects. That's the biggest
from my other projects. And so then I say, like, hey, this is a problem, and I think you guys should know about it. Well, did you try this setting? I will, but I don't think that's the problem. And so it's like, again, it's like it's on me to troubleshoot their mistake. And so I burned a lot of time on stuff that I really should have given up sooner and just said, it doesn't work. Send me something that works and we'll talk about it. And
Please test it out before you send it. Yeah.
Well, and there's this brilliant editorial. No, I will not read your effing screenplay, but they don't say effing. They actually use the F bomb. And the whole lesson of this is like a famous writer who's constantly getting hit up to like read other people's terrible screenplays. And he's sort of adopted this, like, I need to just be an asshole up front. Because it doesn't matter how much I capitulate, how much I try to help them, unless I hand them a career that they don't deserve, or I just tell them that their writing's amazing and I'll hook them up with an agent, eventually I'm going to get to a point where they think I'm an asshole anyway. So I might as well have saved myself the weeks of hassle and frustration and just been an asshole up front. And I really just should have been an asshole up front. These things are broken. I'm not going to shoot videos on them. Send me a label and I'll return them to you so you can see how they don't work. And that should have been the end of it.
Yeah.
But I played the game. Well, I don't want to ruffle fit. I'm just letting you guys know this is a thing. If I make a video, it's really not going to look good for your product. So it's either send me something that works, or I will make a video on the things that you sent me. So how do you want to play this?
The ball's in your court, my friend. Welcome to the club. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think it's one of those challenging things. I've had that happen to me one time with some pre-release Kickstarter campaign, 4K or 5K, 4K glasses and stuff like that.
I'm gonna start sending, like, here's my consulting rate.
Yeah.
It's not cheap.
We should just add that as part of our contract and just like, hey, in case your product doesn't work and we end up spending weeks troubleshooting, this is what the rate is going to be.
I might start adding that to contracts.
That may fix the problem once they see the potential cost, as opposed to, because you're not working with the engineers. You're working with the PR person or whoever the contact is. They're relaying what they're getting.
Yeah, it's like the stupidest game of telephone.
And time zone difference. And anyway, I'm with you. It's a unique place to be in, and I don't wish it on anybody. I'll say that. It's for anybody that's trying a product. It's already a process and time consuming to dedicate the time to be able to troubleshoot just try to compare and build up your analysis and do everything on the stuff to add troubleshooting to it. It just creates frustration and changes the experience. I mean, you don't want a customer to go through the same thing you think you're going through, and you don't know what will remain, like what part of the experience stays with like a publicly released version of it. So it's hard. I mean, we saw what we saw with the Humane, with the early release devices that were sent out for review.
Yeah,
they got some mixed reviews. You know, Mr. Fisher, you know, although excited,
you can't put the toothpaste back in that tube, man.
No.
It's like,
yeah,
this thing isn't, it like really doesn't look like it's ready to be talked about in any way.
The way it was hyped, don't get me wrong. And there's some reviews that go both ways. Some reviews seeing it as kind of like, you need to learn, you need to understand, you need to adapt. This is a new way, a new thing. We didn't all suddenly become magical and super users of our nowadays smartphones.
No, I don't buy it.
But it needs to function. It's not about the UI and usability. It's more about, like, you know, some of the art. I forget, was it The Verge trying to get it to translate Japanese? And it all it was doing was repeating the same words that were being said to it in a funnier, slightly more offensive way, because it didn't sound right when it was coming out. So I felt like, wow, that is weird. There's a lot of factors into what that form factor is trying to be. It's trying to replace your phone, and it's trying to be, I think, as Mr. Fisher said, I think, was it the Star Trek communicator, right? The computer on your chest. And I think that was the genesis of it, or at least his intention of it to be.
I think that's a terrible idea, but okay, let's at least see. And they couldn't even deliver an iteration of that which seems more functional. I loved talking about the hilarity of the novelty of having, like,
you know, something, like, just
hand
come up
computer. Yeah. So sure, we see that in terrible science fiction, you know, transparent phones and the, you know, laser phone that pops out from your hand.
I am all for that, by the way, with Upload. I definitely want to see that phone.
This, like, projection idea is, to me, it's like, yeah, we can talk about how wacky it is.
Yeah.
Sure. But you know what I didn't have a problem with? The immediate connectivity and functionality was the Focals by North. Mm-hmm. I put them on my face and I had a functional optical heads-up display connected to my phone that stayed in my pocket.
Yeah.
And I want that. I'm so tired of this idea that, like, what our next step has to be is disruption. This is going to be the thing that you're not going to use your phone anymore. Well, how about we just use the compute power of our phone as a brain to power better accessories? Mm-hmm. And then from there, the accessories can get more powerful and eventually become their own standalone computers. But, like, I'm not ready to mount a Snapdragon 8 Gen 4 to my face. not 15 watts of power right between my eyes. That's going to be really stupid hot and need a huge battery to accomplish. Yeah. But I could put some glasses on my face and look at my phone a whole hell of a lot less would be really nice. And that was immediately accessible and functional. Yep. So I don't need the LLM to run on my chest. That seems dumb.
Well, I feel like a lot of the functions that they were trying to leverage is of the connectivity function. It is a subscription-based, connected access to their language models, access and unlimited questions, unlimited queries, and so on. There's a lot of things going on. But the premise of that connectivity function that it needed to be in made it so that it was having to have a radio, a 5G, a 4G radio, I'm assuming. I don't even think they would put 5G in it. But like having a consistent radio in there that would be consistently draining the battery, not being able to stop or hibernate. You know, like, so to me, those are things. Mm-hmm. Again, it is a Gen 1 product. It is an innovation in its own. I'm not going to deny the concept of it. It just wasn't ready to be reviewed in the form that it was. No. And I'll say that Mr. Fisher is definitely a big fan of it, and you could definitely feel you can hear it in his voice that he wanted it to land better. He wanted it to be what he wanted it to be going in, but we'll have to see to a certain point in the future. But you're right, now it is what it is, and we have other options
too
as well. Yeah,
miss when phones were wacky, because I loved phones when they were new, wacky. A long time ago, I was that guy, and I wore my heart on my sleeve. Yeah. But really, what I want is to go back. I want a phone. Like, for example, Oppo just bought all of LG's audio patents.
Nice. As long as they can.
I want a OnePlus with a quad DAC. Let's do that.
Let's do that.
Let's give me an actual reason
bring back the headphone jack, my friend, and make it good.
I want a company to get ahead of the EU and replace return to user replaceable batteries. Well, if you're already going to dedicate the mechanisms to making the battery, why not just go whole hog and give us a memory card slot again? Instead of saying, hey, wasn't it nice when phones could do more things? Why don't we just make a phone that does more things? How about that?
I mean,
let's get back to some of that. And then our accessories can kind of play with our own little area network of smart stuff, but the phone can just be this brain that powers the other experiences, since it's already a concentrated little compute brick. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can go back to having smaller phones, because I'm also doing so much through some type of heads-up display. You know, if I can just throw to my glasses and my glasses just project a giant TV screen, I don't need a huge screen in my phone. I don't need a folding screen in my phone if I've got a really great accessory platform that can do something like project a TV-sized display.
Yeah, like a display that can be on when you need it, and when you don't need it, they work as regular glasses, and it circumvents the need, and you just hook up a wire. No, I think that's actually a really good idea, from the sense of we already use it. I already use our glasses, our Roku glasses, to be able to edit videos, watch content, connect. Yeah. I love – that's one of my favorite features now with anything that supports display out. One of the exciting reasons why I'm not going to lie, one of the reasons why I decided I wanted to go into the Android 15 beta, which now seems
like – connect glasses to your Pixel. Yeah. It's so good.
Well, because we were supposed to have that on Android 14. A lot of the stuff Michelle was able to look up some of the code back in before 14 was released.
Oh,
but I feel like it was taken out.
But there were hints and rumors and leaks of expanded desktop mode on 12 and 13 too.
Yeah.
We've been playing this game for
years. The mode has been in there for years. I know, I'm with you. But I was like, more about the code was starting to show more functions of display port, this using, because it's always been limited by the hardware. The reason why Pixel 8 Pro is primarily what's supported with this is because it actually has the hardware. It just wasn't activated. As opposed to in previous generations with the 7, 6, and
they just didn't support it.
It was just not built in.
So I will say that was fair, but honestly, I'm actually still surprised that we finally made it. I would have said, like, maybe it's going to be a Pixel 9 or a Pixel 10 thing.
It may actually be. You're right. It may actually be optimized for the 9 series, not necessarily for 8, but 8 can play because it's on the beta side. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
They're just rough testing it on the Pixel 8. So I don't know. We'll see.
It would be totally messed up, though, if it ends up being Dex. Like, launching a 9 Pro, and they're like, now with Dex.
So here's part of the thing, though, is, like, we talked a little bit about the new Android Tracker Network on the Monday Morning Podcast.
Exactly.
And the Find My Device. I did a video just kind of putting out, like,
I saw that as well.
Some thoughts on where I thought it was going to go. I would not be surprised if Google and Samsung are working closely on a tablet-y interface as a second screen mode. The alternative display view, I think, is what it's called in actual Android code.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the newest version of Dex on Galaxy Tabs, it's a lot tablet-ier. And we know that Samsung has their own tracker network. They have their own smart tags.
Yep.
So is Samsung going to give up on that? Or is it just going to merge like QuickShare and Nearby Share kind of got stapled together? I would not be surprised if what we see in a final consumer version of a Pixel desktop mode is like the tablet-y version of Samsung Dex. I bet you this stuff is a lot more collaborative behind the scenes than we think it might be.
There is a tablet mode and more of a what they call like the production mode on Xiaomi's tablets as well, the 12S Pro that I'm playing with right now, where you get the ability of running everything in pop-up windows. It's like everything is windowed in that default separate mode that you're able to launch, where if you turn that off, everything runs as an app that just shows up as a full screen every single time. You can split screen and do whatever. But in that separate mode, it pops up as a floating window. Like anytime you open something and you're able to snap things, change format, change sizes, so on. As long as it's vetted, as long as it's functional and it is intuitive in some way, that the learning curve is not, I would say, not
daunting. Oh, but I was just saying, to your point, like, what would it be if we just got Dex? Like, honestly, I think Samsung and Google might meet in the middle.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I think you'll see sort of the dip. Like, you have something like the Pixel. Whoops. I just dropped it back on my desk. You have something like the Pixel Fold, which is a slightly more phone UI and then a slightly more tablet UI.
With you. Yep. No, I'm with you.
Well, now your desktop mode is just going to be the slightly more tablet UI. And Samsung has already started incorporating that. I know someone was here. Who was it? Michael Corcoran is in our chat saying, I'm not crazy at all about the new Dex. It's like new Coke. It's less desktop-y and it's more tablet-y.
Yeah.
But that to me is like, well, they already have it. Google has now started working in that direction. I bet you we're kind of going to end up at some halfway point where Google is sort of borrowing these ideas or outright combining them with what Samsung has already done. And Samsung actually has a lot to kind of point to. Not only having blazed this trail, but like when Google wasn't doing a tracker network, they had their own tags out there. When Google wasn't doing split screen multitasking, Samsung was incorporating that into their phones.
No, they brought it in on the Note series. I think it was in the Note 2 series it started. Yeah.
I think to like your comment there, though, is it's like, yeah, it seems like Google is really leaning on Samsung for major chunks of the future direction of Android. So I wouldn't be crazy surprised if it ended up just sort of feeling like our Pixels just sort of started feeling a little more like Galaxies.
I'm with you. Yeah. No, we'll have to see. I think overall for me, though, it's going to end up being something that we're early. It's still beta. There's a lot of conversations still going on. For all we know, between you and me, this may just end up being the first version of it we see and may not even be fully vetted till the end and around Android 16. It could just be that early. The fact that we have video out, though, I think just for screen mirroring, though, is a major win, especially for Pixel 8 owners, even if they just keep that as a function, leave the port open, don't disable it when we go full 15. And way more customers will appreciate it. I think for me alone, that was one of my biggest, like, oh man, such a missed opportunity when the 8 Pro came out, because it was such a big hype. We talked about it for months, and it was just, either way.
Yeah, even just the passive.
We're getting closer. I'll say that. Yeah,
would have been
better. We're seeing footsteps in the sand. So at least now we're in the right direction.
Wrapping this all up, because you know, we're actually kind of running a bit long. What do you have coming out? Because we started this whole long crazy diatribe with you asking me what else I was working on, and boy did that get us sidetracked. So for me,
I'm finishing up my review on the 6S Pro tablet from Xiaomi. It's the 12.4 tablet. It's a larger tablet, really nice. Really interesting AI functionality built into the actual drawing app. I'm trying to get that activated, which is what's been holding me back a little bit, because it requires some kind of early access to a beta program. So that part I'm hopefully going to be finishing up shooting and getting ready for early next week. But I am also hoping that some content on, and it shouldn't be a big surprise, but like here, so there's, and let's see, will we get the Focus? No, we won't.
Nope.
Sony is just like, no, my friend, the party ain't started. Hold on. Okay. So I'm working on some content on this, on the brand new Xiaomi Fan Festival that's currently going on right now with, some people visiting their main campus in China, which I really wish I would have been able to be part of that team here. So, oops, sorry. I just realized it's a fingerprint magnet, but all my fingers are all over the place. So here. This is the special edition Xiaomi Note 13 Pro Plus. It's a 5G enabled device, and it has it's a special custom color made for the festival. Some unique features in there, wallpapers, some unique mementos, and so on. So I have some stuff going on right now. Hopefully, I'll be able to push those out within the next couple of days. That's going to round up my week, and then just trying to get back on the bandwagon with some cool content coming up next week with the Xiaomi Pad. Get back into things and more things that I can't talk about right now.
Hooray!
embargo. No, I know. It's one of those. Hopefully you guys get a chance to catch it up, of course. With Juan, we'll be able to catch you again on Monday with the SGG QA. I'm not going to be able to make it on that one. I have a few conflicts, unfortunately.
Okay. It was nice having you, but
it was actually fine. Nice to start off the week. Like, it was... We haven't done it for so long. That's what I'm saying.
I think like that Monday morning slot just kind of helps get my mind right for getting back into my work week.
I'm totally with it. And usually I try to jump in and out on the YouTube side. It just, if I'm in the office, I can't go on Twitch. And the only way I can watch it is on the YouTube side. And I try to get in and out. So I'm usually in the chat. Sometimes you'll see me say hello and stuff like that. But it's nice. It was definitely very nice to be able to join you on that. I think it was really cool. So we'll have to see. But make sure to catch Juan on Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time with the SGG QA. And, of course, we'll be back next Thursday with another episode. Hopefully more things that we couldn't talk about this week that we'll be able to talk about next week. Because only time can unveil the embargoes, or basically make it so that
was passed. That was deep. I like that. Yeah,
I'm trying to take us off on a good note. So, yeah.
Do it.
With that being said, thank you very much to everybody for hanging out with us on this beautiful Thursday. I hope you're safe. I hope you're doing well. And of course, as always, Juan and I will have the audio version of this podcast come out within the next day or so. Be safe. And again, as usual, we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye for now.